Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, really excited. We've done a decent amount of recruiting coverage recently, tried to provide people with as much content as possible over the holidays. And just as a something that's been building up organically in our own inbox and Twitter social mentions, but also as kind of a thank you to the incredible, overwhelming support we've received from people. We have a very large mailbag episode to jump right into and to get through. But in large part, because of the episode we have, is the interaction that we've had via social really over the last month or so with people and Louisiana Hot Sauce. And just want to thank you for all that. It's really been impressive and continues to be. Our audience is really our greatest asset, and just want to thank everybody for the support they've given us. And it's a hell of a product that we're able to tout, Bud. And I know it's one that that you continue to appreciate and enjoy.
Indeed. In fact, I shared this little anecdote with you this morning, Ingram. I had a little bit of another hot sauce left over, and I wasn't really paying attention to what I was going to put on my eggs. And I reached into the cupboard and grabbed it. And I put it on there and I started eating. I was like, man, this tastes weird. And I realized I was not using Louisiana hot sauce. And the stuff I put on there tasted just too vinegary. I was like, no. So went back, got the Louisiana, put on some extra to cover up the too vinegary taste of the other hot sauce, which I've now thrown out. And all was right in the world. This stuff has grown on me. I mean, when we first started using it, it was good. But I wasn't necessarily of the opinion that it was like the most amazing ever. But man, the more I use it, the more I like it. Like, it's really, I think, the best hot sauce out there. And I like that it just goes with everything. It's pretty sweet.
The more I use it, the more I like it. I'm a huge, I just love cooking and love food in general, and probably cook more than the average, the average male of my age, but I thoroughly enjoy it. And straight honest truth here, this is not sponsorship talk, but there's rare that a meal goes by where I don't try to work it into the meal prep in general. And it's a fantastic product. It's one that we're so fortunate to be able to pair with. They've been able to be a great partner with us and are a large part in kind of the upgrade in audio that we've been striving for, particularly over the past 6 weeks. And just lucky to be able to have a partner and something that we can authentically speak about and very much enjoy the experience and hope and continue to hope that our listenership enjoys it as well. So, Bud, we've got about 20 different emails we're going to try to touch on, try to combine as much as possible, try to be as non-repetitive, also tried to condense this is a great thing. I'm not complaining at all, but a decent amount of the feedback that we had didn't have one or two questions, but had more like four, five, or six. That's awesome. I appreciate it, but I don't know that either Bud or I could turn in a 4-hour podcast right now. So we've got to try to streamline it as much as possible and try to choose and be as selective in some of the questions that we have, but really excited to go through them. Get your opinion. I'll certainly not be shy with giving mine, and look forward to jumping right into this.
All right, Ingram, so to kick this off, we're going to welcome in reverse chronological order. David said, Dan Hicks in 2013, Marcus Lewis and Nyquan Murray in 2016. Why does Florida State's coaching staff seem to have trouble identifying which players need to be getting minutes coming out of camp? You want to take a crack at this one, or I may have an answer.
I'll take a quick crack at it and hand it over to you. One, it's not uncommon to occasionally have a misevaluation on your own roster. So to look back at 13 and then have to jump to 16, that's – and look, nobody gets it right all the time, certainly, and there's probably been some mistakes in between. But I would say to an extent that's just to be expected. – And you're going to have a misidentification as to who should be playing. That is more directed at Hicks and Lewis. The Nyquan Murray thing, I think as we got further through the year, we saw damn well, probably very, very well, as to what was tied to maybe why Murray wasn't on the field. I mean, the Orange Bowl turned out well, and he certainly had an incredible effort. But man, what are you doing trying to field that ball on the 3-yard line? There's just a stubbornness with Murray. And even if you go back and you look at the catch and you look at the 90 seconds that bookend either of it, there's Naquan getting his absolute ass chewed out, which you hear almost all of it, thanks to the ESPN mic. And then he catches the ball. I would love to see what the celebration was, but he immediately flips out. Dossie tells him to go run down and get him. And then Jimbo gets involved. And I'm pretty sure Jimbo actually breaks Naquan Murray's gold chain in the process, which is hilarious to me. But he is also trying to embark a point on Murray as well. So Lewis and Hicks, I can understand to an extent. Naquan Murray, I think, is a little bit of a different example. And I'll let my example, or I'll let my answer over the last 60 seconds be the point that I was trying to make on that one.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's everybody's going to make mistakes. I'm sure there are examples we could think of in other seasons where guys got moved around. The real key here is that fall practice is not games, right? Sometimes guys do a little bit different stuff than they do in practice. We've all been around guys in baseball. They're called what? 6 o'clock hitters, where they hit the crap out of the ball in batting practice, but when the lights come on and the actual game starts, they're nowhere close. Look, you got some guys who are just better practice players than they are game players. You have some guys who are better game players than they are practice players. And as a coach, that creates an extremely difficult evaluation, because how are you going to go with your gut? You're going to say, well, this guy can't get his shit together in practice, but man, I really think he's very close to being able to play exactly how we need him to play in a game. It sounds kind of crazy. In some ways it is. So I don't think that they've been like really bad at this. There are some examples that they were clearly wrong. I think moving Marcus Lewis as late as they did in practice, they clearly misevaluated his ability to understand that position. I think Marcus Lewis still has talent, by the way. I think he right now has an injury, a crisis of confidence, and maybe does not have the capacity to pick up that position as fast as he needed to pick it up once McFadden won that job over him at the boundary corner spot. Because if we recall, they were actually in a battle for that spot entering the season. You know, I just have a hard time getting worked up over this. I don't think that they've done a bad job identifying it. Sometimes I think they may be stubborn as to who needs to be on the field in terms of overall talent relative to sort of playing within the system. Maybe they can strike a better balance on that, but I don't think they've done a bad job with that.
No, they haven't, and it's not something you're going to see. Like if you look at other programs, we've talked about, you know, maybe passively following another program just to get a better idea as to consistent issues that you can get a better appreciation for. You're going to see that all across college football. So no, I don't know that that's necessarily a problem that Florida State has, and it's certainly not one that's unique to Florida State. Bud, we'll jump to question number two. I'll pose it to you and let you respond first. Morgan asked, can you all think of a player who had comparable accuracy issues and then made marked improvement? Is this something improved footwork can improve? Improved footwork, a little bit redundant there, but I understand the point.
You know, maybe. Somebody on Twitter today mentioned Jamarcus Russell, and I'm going to look into this more. Apparently he had like a 50% completion percentage as a freshman and then did get a lot better. And the reason I bring up Jamarcus Russell is because, you know, who was his coach, Jimbo Fisher at LSU. I think Jimbo's a hell of a quarterback coach, man. And I don't know if he's the best coach at mechanics. I think the best thing Jimbo does is helping his quarterback to understand a very complicated and detailed scheme, right? And more importantly than ever, if you're going to run something like this, you have got to be able to coach it, because it's so much different than the spread stuff that they're teaching at the high school level these days. So the transition is more difficult at Florida State than it is in a lot of offenses. I think it's a strength of Jimbo's. Are mechanics a strength of Jimbo's? I don't necessarily know. I don't think I've ever heard anybody on a broadcast credit, you know, Fisher for working with the quarterback's mechanics. You hear a lot of the draft stuff. You know, they had some questions about Ponder's mechanics, about EJ's, even something about Jameis's. I mean, ultimately, it wasn't enough to keep him from being drafted number one. Can footwork improve accuracy? Yes, because everybody throws better when they're on balance. If you have more consistent footwork, you will be more consistently on balance. Thus, you will throw better. But that's only part of it, right? The other part of accuracy is just this kind of natural hand talent. And that's something that a lot of people believe, and I'm around a lot of quarterback coaches because I do cover recruiting, which means I'm on the Elite 11 circuit. So I'm around a lot of these private quarterback coaches all the time. And they won't say this on the record because, look, man, they're making their money telling people how much better they can get you as a quarterback. But if you chat with them, there's this kind of general consensus that, man, some guys just have the ability to put the ball where it needs to be, and some just don't have the ability to do it quite as often. We'll see how much better Jimbo Fisher can get DeAndre Francois. If you pull up CFBstats.com, 47% completions against ranked teams is, look, folks, if that doesn't improve by a lot, I mean, we're talking that needs to be up, 8-10 percentage points 10%. Against ranked teams if Florida State 10%. Has any shot to win a national title. I mean, FSU is being ranked in the top, three, top five in some of these polls that we've seen. They got no shot if that doesn't get better. And we're talking about missing guys who are wide open when there's not pressure. All those third and longs against Clemson when there was pressure, a lot of those were created because you missed on first down on easy throws that you need to complete when there's not pressure on you. But I don't think you Pitt fans should give up hope. Somebody told me, DeAndre Francois is really tough and he's a good leader. And I agree with both those things, right? When things are going bad, you're seeing Lamar Jackson throw a hissy fit on the field, the Heisman winner, and you're seeing Francois not do that, right? He keeps his composure. I think those guys do play really hard for him. They care about him. And those are things that's hard to teach too, man. Getting up after some of those hits is hard to teach. But at the end of the day, I can't toughness the ball to the receiver. I can't leadership the ball to the receiver. Either you're accurate or you're not. And next year, you're going to need to be a lot better because Dalvin Cook's gone. Dalvin Cook, who erased all these mistakes this year in large part. Cam Akers is not going to beat Dalvin Cook year one, man, if it happens, at all. But it has to improve a whole lot, and we'll see how much Jimbo Fisher can get him to improve. We'll see as well. I think Fisher has to figure out how much he has to make a reasonable approximation of how much he can get Francois' accuracy to improve. And then once he figures out how much he legitimately thinks he can do it in this year, because we're talking about a really good defense coming back, like a national championship defense, I believe, in Tallahassee. He's going to have to figure out what else he can do on offense to sort of minimize the negative effects of this inaccuracy, which the thing we worry about here is that it's been an issue since high school, right? Just bad misses, throwing balls in the dirt, uncatchable passes way too often. It's why a lot of us thought Malik Henry, if he could ever have got his act together and stayed clean, would have beaten him out eventually. We'll see. I mean, if he can't get him more accurate, then I think you do have to go to more quarterback run type concepts to reduce the number of times you throw. The other issue that I don't know is the shoulder, right? And if you are in the people in the positive camp, and I may be there with you, that you think Francois can improve his accuracy considerably, then I think one of the main reasons you've got to be telling yourself that this can happen, because it doesn't happen too often, is that maybe there's some sort of shoulder thing they're going to clean up in the offseason, right? And that clearly that was bothering him at times this year. How much of that inaccuracy can we attribute to the shoulder? It's tough to tell. In some throws, I think it looks like it probably did impact the throw. In other times, I don't think so. I think it's just a lack of natural hand talent. But there's no doubt in my mind there are some throws that were impacted. If they can get that shoulder right and get that shoulder healthier, you could see, 2-3, maybe 4 percentage point bump just from being healthier. That could be big. And if you could read defenses faster and set the protections right and get the calls right, you could maybe not take kill shots on the blitz like the one that was his own fault in the Orange Bowl when he got blasted. Also, the offensive line can be better and block for him better, that could also reduce the amount of hits on the shoulder. But that's a long-winded way of saying, look, man, if you're one of these people that's an optimist, you're going to say, I think the shoulder contributed more than we realized, and that if they get that thing fixed, he's going to be a lot better in year two as a starter. The second part of this question from Morgan, as a Knoll, I should be rooting for Bama, right? You know, the more I thought about this, people ask me a lot on Twitter. I was a little surprised at just how much they wanted to ask and how much they wanted to know, probably because the rooting guides we do on Tomahawk Nation. This is also similar to Kevin's question, which I'm going to read here so we can answer these both at the same time and get on with it. Kevin asks, I love the rooting guide you guys started last year on Tomahawk Nation. I'm curious whom you would suggest FSU fans root for in the national championship game. Last year, for me, it was an easy decision wanting Clemson to win. The ACC needs another team that's won a national title of recent. However, if FSU hopes for a shot in the playoff next year, would they stand a better chance if Bama is battling a complacency mindset that comes with back-to-back titles? So interesting, kind of juxtaposition here of questions. Morgan thinks Bama, right? Kevin thinks Clemson, right? You know, certainly Clemson winning the title does help the ACC. Does it actually help Florida State? I'm going to say no. For this reason, recruiting, right? FSU actually consistently wins battles against Clemson. It, for the most part, loses every legitimate battle it faces against Alabama in recruiting. Okay? People have cited Stanford Samuels III to me. You'll realize where his dad played, right? Like, he's a legacy. That's not really a kind of a fair fight type thing. So
the wins are few and far between. Keith Gavin's the only one that immediately comes to mind.
Exactly right. So is this going to help Clemson's recruiting? Yes. Is it going to hurt Florida State's recruiting? Probably a little bit, but not that much. I don't think it really matters. If you wanted Clemson to win, cool. If you wanted Bama to win, fine. What kind of caught me off guard is these people with this sort of doomsday attitude after the game. Oh, Clemson's going to take over the ACC, and they're going to get all the recruits from Florida State. I'm thinking, did Clemson move its school? Because location is still the most important thing in recruiting by far. It's why almost all of your elite programs are close to talent centers. And unless Clemson is all of a sudden going to open up like a satellite campus in Tampa, I really wouldn't worry about this too much.
I have a little bit of a different opinion. I don't think it's necessarily a negative thing, and I know it's an oversimplification to point to 2013 and the similarities that existed there between the two programs. I don't know that it's a bad thing. I certainly think it's good for the conference. You're right, it certainly legitimizes Clemson more. I'll tell you the teams that I would be far more concerned with, and that's it. I would say Tennessee, to be honest with you. Tennessee has to be able to go into the Carolinas, North Carolina and South Carolina to an extent, and be able to recruit. And I would say it's a hell of a lot more damaging to the SEC East and parts of it necessarily. Look, SEC, ACC, whatever, there's a direct correlation with Clemson. You play them every year. They are your most talented rival, let me put it that way right now. Good for them. They got their chance at a once-in-a-generation prospect at quarterback and were able to make the most of it. But I don't necessarily think it's a negative thing for Florida State. And really the positive that it has to do with the conference, I think, could really be beneficial. You're right, they don't win many wins against Alabama, but I do think it goes a long way in kind of pulling out some of the pieces that lay behind this superiority complex of the SEC, to the point where even people, you know, deep in SEC country who are baptized in the water and happily drink it are very much kind of acknowledging that, hey, this isn't necessarily, you know, rubber stamp every year the best conference in college football. And I think it might help Florida State be able to go into places like Mississippi, just in the very deep South, and have a better chance of pulling a kid. Head-to-head, does it give Clemson more legitimacy? Absolutely. Does it maybe open up parts of the South that didn't otherwise exist. I'll be interested to see how that plays out over the next 2 years.
But Paul, SEC, SEC, Paul, you know, I don't know about this quarterback we have. Not that I want to throw the football, but if we right. had to throw the football, we need to have a better throw at quarterback. Watching Feinbaum today, we're recording this late on Wednesday night. Watching Feinbaum today was hilarious, dude. Those folks are they're special group of folks,
special group of people. Absolutely,
I do think ACC will be wildly overrated next year.
Oh, it will be. It will be. But it's good that both universities from the state of Alabama have lost a national championship to an ACC program and have both had to deal with that. But yeah, you're right. Especially coming off this bowl season, there'll be an overimportance placed on that. And the ACC, based off both bowl results and significant talent that are leaving the rosters this year, will probably be significantly overrated. I agree.
I mean, especially because what really separated the ACC this year? Did it have better defensive lines than our conferences? No.
Can I submit quarterback play, bud?
Yeah.
I think that's
it, man. People act like it had so much better coaching than our conferences. Like, man, Mark Richt, he got fired from the SEC. You know, I think Justin Fuente is a nice upgrade at Virginia Tech over what Beamer was, but it's quarterback play. And this year, the ACC is losing its top five rated quarterbacks. That's by quarterback rating. So, of course, Lamar Jackson won the Heisman. Look, I mean, he averaged 160 yards rushing against ranked teams this year. Okay, but by quarterback rating, the top five, which is what? Trubisky, Watson, Peterman, Kaya, and Evans, they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think
not a top five quarterback, but Georgia Tech loses one of their better quarterbacks in program history as well. So, yeah, exactly. A significant loss of talent at that.
You might go from the best quarterbacks of the Power Five to the worst.
Good point.
I mean, seriously, like I think the SEC's quarterbacks are going to be a lot better than the ACC's next year. The Big 12, Baker Mayfield comes back. They've got some, and Mason Rudolph decided to come back as well at Oklahoma State. The Washington State kid decided to come back. The USC kid is a redshirt freshman. Josh Rosen won't be hurt next year, assumedly, for UCLA. So the Pac-12 will probably be better. Big 10 might not be better. I got to think about who they have. But you really could go first to worst, first to fifth in terms of quarterback play among the Power 5 leagues if you're ACC. But hopefully FSU gets some quality wins against ACC teams early before everybody realizes that they're probably kind of overrated.
Well, that would be nice, and that would certainly play into the SEC's own kind of storylines.
That's how they do it, isn't it?
The past couple of years. Absolutely. Absolutely. Pre-existing storylines and the preseason storylines that plant themselves in people's minds, and all of a sudden, let's go back to 3 or 4 years ago, where all of a sudden Texas A&M goes and beats a South Carolina team that's not worth a damn, and people convince themselves that Texas A&M may be the best team in the country for 4 or 5 weeks, simply because of preseason disillusionment. So, yeah, it probably plays a larger role than people realize, just some of the narratives and groupthink that gets built into college football throughout the process of the preseason this summer. Anyway, Bud, we are not moving through any questions at any lightning speed, but let's move on here. We're on a rather glacial pace so far, but nothing wrong with that. Question number three is from Jeff. He asks, assuming Rod Johnson leaves, do you see one of the younger linemen stepping into his place, parentheses, Josh Ball, etc., or is it possible one of the guards could move to tackle? It seems we have three guys in Bell, Minshew, and Dickerson, and only two spots. Could one of them also be a candidate at center if Everly doesn't keep his job?
Man, this is the guy who follows the roster. Jeff, good question.
He's packed three into one, definitely. Yes.
And this is a good way to ask a question because it's harder for me to only answer part of it. Like this is a well-crafted question. Okay, right. Rod Johnson did turn pro on Tuesday. I think that was the right move. I don't know if we need to debate that so much. Maybe you have a different opinion. I think he's easily a top 100 pick. And with the new CBA, if you're going to make like the big time money, the real key to do that is to get to that second contract, which is where the big money is now because they the union kind of ate its young and stripped all the money out of these rookie deals, you got to get to that second contract as young as possible so that you can potentially sign a third. I mean, if you want to make the real, you know, crazy money, Rod will be able to do that, assuming he sticks in the league because he's going. Also, I think he'll be overdrafted. I think he'll be drafted higher than his true play indicates he should be, just because this is one of the worst tackle years, if you talk to NFL guys, in a decade. But yet, it doesn't decrease the league's need for tackles. The supply is just very small. So what do you have, Ingram? A market effect here when you have very high demand and very limited supply.
Yes, I will fall back on my undergrad of economics and say that that is very beneficial to Mr. Johnson in the supply and demand scenario that you've laid out there.
So we wish Rod well. You know, also, I think there's a question of, okay, how much better did he get in 3 years? Will he actually get that much better in a fourth year? Don't know. NFL coaching is pretty good. All right, so who replaces Rod Johnson? I think the number one candidate in my mind would be probably Rick Leonard, who played much better at the end of the year at right tackle once he kind of was able to reset after struggling early in the year. He could potentially do it. If that happens, you'd probably have maybe a Brock Rugel type at right tackle. Josh Ball, who redshirted this year, a freshman four-star out of, where was he, Virginia? I think Virginia.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, so certainly could. Could be a tackle there, I'm not sure, left or right. Really, what you're trying to do here is fill in a tackle. It doesn't necessarily have to be left tackle, right? Because you can slide somebody over to right if you move your left. I want to see what Derek Kelly does. Derek Kelly, I thought, was pretty promising as a freshman in 2015, and then he hurt his knee, and I think this year he was a shell of his former self, which is disappointing, and nowhere close to an FSU-quality player this year. Does he come back maybe another year removed from the knee injury and give you something? I don't know. I certainly hope so. I like Derek. You know, what does Juwan Williams give you? Your 6'7" Gumby, who can stick both legs behind his head, as he showed us at the Under Armour check-in before the All-Star game 2 years ago. You know, is he going to be ready? Are you ever going to get anything out of Abdul Bello? I think that my point here is I'm not necessarily super confident in any one guy, but I do think that there's a reason to be confident due to strength in numbers. To the second part of his question, it seems we have three guys in Bell, Minshew, and Dickerson for only two guard spots. Well, I agree on its face. Minshew, however, has never stayed healthy for a protracted period of time. To me, that's a legitimate concern, right? You can't just assume that he's going to stay healthy. You know what the best indicator of future injury is?
Past result.
Right. Past injuries. Injured guys stay injured, and they get injured a lot. Certain guys just avoid injury. Now, there's a decent luck component in this, but a lot of these baseball podcasts I listen to, they say it a lot when they're talking about factoring risk with these contracts. You know, the greatest indicator of future injury is past injury. Kind of baseball nerd voice there. It's true. Minshew's been injured a lot. I don't know if you can count on him playing 14 games. Knock on wood, but it's just kind of the facts. Dickerson is coming off an ACL injury that he didn't suffer like real early in the year. Now, a lot of times these ACL injuries don't take as long, but you know, sometimes they do. I don't know that you necessarily want to move one of those guys to tackle unless they're really healthy. Minshew just kind of got settled in at guard and I think played fairly well in the bowl game before he moved from right to left after Kareem Hart got hurt. Dickerson, I know some people thought he would be a tackle. I think he looked pretty good at guard oftentimes. I don't know, man. I think that your answer at tackle is more likely to come from a guy who's currently listed on the roster at tackle than one of these three guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the third part of the question, would one of them actually get shot at center? No, I don't think so. I think if there's somebody at center, it would, you know, Everly most likely to keep his job, followed by either Baselli or Bavion Johnson.
heard anything more about Bavion, but this is not per script by any means, but if how he's making the transition and if he'll be ready to contribute at all.
I have not. I know that for the brief period of time we were able to watch practice, his snaps were a problem. And then now media is not allowed to watch practice anymore, so that's kind of disappointing. But I haven't heard anything new. To be honest, I just took my Christmas lights down today because my flight got delayed and I had to work a whole lot on Tuesday. So I have not been talking to people about the team at any extensive level for like at least 10 days now. It's all like anytime I'm talking to somebody at Florida State this time of year, it's just all talking about recruiting.
Bud, let me ask one more question, then I'll let you pose a couple my way. But question number four comes from Luther. It is short, simple, and complimentary. Luther asks, starts with a statement, but I like your podcast. Thank you, Luther. Can you tell me where I can get the music that you use at the start of your podcast? Well, Luther, that is a creation of our producer, Judson Wright. Judson's been working with us for about, 4 or 5 months now, and that is an original piece, and Judson more or less can make that available at his own discretion, from my own understanding. So, Bud, I don't know what you think about that. We've kicked around the idea of distributing that or packaging it up in some form, but have certainly received a lot of compliments involving our intro. That's all the work of Judson. He's been a great addition to the podcast, and that's the best way that I can answer number four.
I think that's something we will discuss. It would be pretty cool as a ringtone.
Ringtone's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. And it's not a, what is it? And Judson, feel free to jump on if you want. What is it? 22 seconds in length, something like that. It's not not too long to be able to package or put together in some sort of ancillary form.
Yeah, we could work something out.
I like
Judson,
that.
Did you not, were you not also responsible for the outro music on the last podcast? Maybe two podcasts ago?
I was. I did the Dalvin Cook montage thing. That's kind of the thing I like to do with this podcast now is the make some music and then put on a broadcast feed. Yeah, from some of the highlights. That's always fun. So I do that. I did the Miami one a while ago. Just kind of every once in a while, just to have a little bit of fun, you know, put some montages up.
You do a good job of that, and you do a good job of making that kind of an authentic piece. You're not necessarily copying anybody. It's a nice little original, and been a great addition to this podcast. So certainly appreciate you jumping on, and appreciate all the work that you've helped us with over the last 6 months or so.
Judson is also largely responsible for a lot of the improvement in audio quality. For instance, tonight we were measuring how far away the microphone is from my mouth, so that and then I revealed that actually a lot of times I kind of walk around when I do this podcast, and he said, "Oh Jesus,
it's a lot of soul searching."
Yeah. So tonight I'm trying to
look behind the curtain.
Absolutely. Stay somewhat stationary. Yes. Yeah. Because that's not a consistent distance. And then we didn't have a yardstick in my office here. So I was like, all right, well, how long is an ESPN magazine? Judson kind of herds these cats, if you will. Ingram, we got to pay some more bills. We got to talk about our other sponsor who's actually been with us the longest. And that's the For the Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social, Central, and now Township. Three great concepts there in College Town. Madison Social, upscale pub grub, Central. Really cool Italian place. I know every time I go there, I really enjoy it. And I like how involved they are with the Florida State community. Being there in College Town, they kind of have their finger on the pulse of the fan base. And those guys at Madison Social have come out with a new shirt that I think we're going to buy maybe a case of and perhaps send to some out to listeners. But just in case you're not one of those lucky listeners to get one, you need to go buy one of these. It says, quote, "There's no what in the fight song." Thanks, Jimbo and Bobby, for clarifying that. That is so true. All these kind of young kids out there, I'm going to sound like a crotchety old man here. They add what in one of the pauses of the fight song. I'm trying to think in my head which pause it is, but it doesn't matter because it's wholly unnecessary. Inappropriate, doesn't really fit, and I don't know who started this, but
Yeah, FLORIDA. It's Florida State. Florida State. What? Basically.
Yeah. Why? What?
I feel like it
why
started maybe that? Around 08, 07, somewhere in that area. Somebody's probably going to correct me on that, but that's a pretty decent estimate of time. And I remember, I graduated college in 2006, so I was not some, you know, cogity old man by any means, but I remember coming back to a game and just being like, whoa, where the hell did this get introduced to that? I have no recollection of this. And all of a sudden it seems like 2/3 of the student body has added that in. So, not to be old man, get off my lawn, but when I saw that t-shirt, I thought it was fantastic. And we in fact will be purchasing some and, spreading it out through our listenership as it's a t-shirt that I am excited to get behind. And it's just another continued example of, as you mentioned, the For the Table group and Madso being as fantastically intertwined and having a pulse on this fan base as any group and certainly any type of restaurant could. So a fantastic partnership. And you're right, they've been with us for a long time and we're excited to continue to work with them moving forward. And Bud, with that, let's jump into the next question.
Ingram, next question?
Absolutely.
I'll ask the Scott one. Scott asks, first off, a big thank you, shout out to you and the Nolcast team. The insights and coverage are second to none. We certainly appreciate that, Scott. Thank you so much. Okay, longtime listener, first-time commentator. Y'all have been covering the Cam Akers recruitment for quite some time, and in your discussions, he was always positioned as a traditional running back. The other day, I watched his highlight film and learned and was amazed that not only is he a weapon with his legs, but also his arm. He was making some brilliant throws. To this end, was he ever recruited by schools as a dual-threat quarterback? Or said differently, did Akers ever want to position himself as a dual-threat QB at the next level? Not that this would ever happen, but imagine him as Georgia Tech's quarterback. Oh my God.
Oh, that was the first, honestly, that was one of the first things I thought when I looked at his highlight film as well. Is good Lord, imagine if Paul Johnson or somebody like that could have gotten in this kid's head and convinced him that he should play quarterback at the next position. But yeah, that's not something we have to concern ourselves with. But Scott, that was the same thing that I thought when I watched that highlight.
All right, there's a version of Madden. It was when Randy Moss was still on the Vikings, and I think I was in high school when I was playing this, but you could actually take Randy Moss and switch him to defensive. You could sub him in as a defensive end, right? The computer algorithm would not block that. And thus, you could essentially use a guy with like 98 speed, 98 acceleration off the edge, just pass rush all the time once you had a big lead. And thus, you would never lose because the offensive line computer guys were just not fast enough to block a receiver playing defensive end. I think that's how that would look with Cam Akers. I just don't think – I'm glad he's not at Georgia Tech because that would just kind of be unfair. Imagine how nerve-wracking that would be to play Cam Akers if you were like a decent defense and they had to play Paul Johnson with Cam Akers. Now, to the question about him throwing, he does have a really big arm. I mean, for a running back at least. I watched him at the Army game and in practice – I'm not allowed to publish. Maybe I am now, actually. There's quite a few trick plays they try to run with him. In fact, they were trying to find every single way to get Cam Akers the ball. And I already told Ingram this, but they substituted Cam Akers in the punt package to make him the up back, to snap the ball directly to him. Didn't have to run that one in the game. They had a double reverse pass where he takes it off some jet motion and then flips it back to Jake Fromm, who then hits DJ Matthews deep. They had another, not reverse pass, but just an end-around pass. And then they had one where Akers just kind of rolled out to the right and then threw back to his left down the field. So they were very aware in the Army game. Jimbo will let some of his guys throw the ball at times. Did they do that this year? Did FSU run a halfback pass this year?
Didn't Jacquez Patrick throw a pass? Pretty good one. Just making that up?
The ones that really stand out in my mind are, I want to say Chris Thompson attempted one, but that I don't think that's true. I know Burt Reed threw one for sure.
He threw a couple. Well, Burt was an old quarterback at Eli or whatever the Panama City High School, if I
Yes.
Attributed him to the wrong one, but yeah.
Easterling, I know, threw one. And threw a couple in practice. And he was, I think, a high school quarterback, too, and had a hell of an arm.
Baseball player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, we're going back a ways. I don't think Dalvin ever threw one, did he?
No, Dalvin never threw the ball.
Maybe Dalvin can't throw. The worst thrower on the team, by the way, is Ermin Lane. Like, to the point where at those recruiting camps over summer, Dossie makes fun. Oh man. We were watching one day, and one of the coaches is like, well, we know who will not be throwing a pass on a trick play ever.
Bud, I am redeemed. It was, in fact, this year. Jacques Patrick, didn't he hit a touchdown pass against NC State?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. No, he didn't hit it. He just missed it to Izzo. That's what it is. That's where that memory comes
from. And it was a well-thrown ball, right?
It was a really well-thrown ball. Yeah, very well-thrown. So that was my most recent halfback pass recollection that I could come up with.
All right, was there a penalty on the play?
If there was, I don't immediately recall it.
Because I pulled up CFBstats.com, and it only shows three guys just throwing a pass this year, Francois, McGuire, and Costantino. But I do recall that like it was at least thrown. I wonder if maybe it got wiped out on a defensive penalty, so that the fact that Izzo didn't pull it in any way didn't matter. This is pretty like revisionist, flying by the seat of our pants history here. I'm sure a lot of the listeners actually do remember.
They probably have a better recollection than both of us. You're right.
All right. But yeah, I think Jimbo absolutely should use him, at least in some ways, as a trick play guy. I mean, the ability to throw there. By the way, DJ Matthews can also really throw. Go on Talk Nation Facebook page and check out the clip of him chucking the ball like 25 rows deep from the middle of the end zone, which is like a 50-yard throw to the troops there in the Army game after scoring.
Take a look at that. Yeah, anytime you can get those two combined. And look, as talented as Akers is, just plant the seed that he could pull it up and you know, potentially be a weapon in a halfback pass or anything else, and just plant that half second of doubt in a safety's mind or anybody else on the field would just make him that much more of a weapon. And you're right. I think a lot of people saw the highlights, if nothing else, saw the highlights that stem from the Mississippi State Championship game and saw him throwing the ball, saw him running the ball, and just had all kinds of different takeaways as to where that kid could be an absolute dominant football player.
Absolutely.
So Scott asked us a series of questions. That was the best one that we could focus on. Hopefully we answered that as well as possible. Also asked another question involving Akers at quarterback, which we won't be able to get to for time's sake. But also just wanted to share this, tweeted us a or emailed an attachment of a picture, a really cool picture of a group of FSU fans sitting there watching the Orange Bowl in the Sydney airport off of somebody's laptop, which I thought was a great picture. Appreciate him sharing and appreciate him associating and thinking of the Knollcast during that. So, Bud, I'll jump to the next one here. Hey, guys, Austin, big fan of the Knollcast, wanted to ask a question, but I'll let you answer this. This is recruiting base. He asks, does FSU have a better chance of flipping Robert Beal or landing Jerez Parks? And who would you rather have? Go Noles, hashtag thanks Dalvin. Much appreciated, Austin. Bud, your answer?
Okay. Oof. This is tough because these are both kind of funny recruitments, man. I think that you have to figure in, like, does Bama have room for Jerez Parks? And at this point, I think they do, but there's some chance they could run out of room. Robert Beal is already committed to another school, and I do think Georgia wants to keep him. So I'm going to say I think Jerez Parks is slightly more likely than Beal, but I'm not real confident in that, as you can probably hear from my voice. Who would I rather have? So Jerez Parks didn't actually play or practice that much at Army. I didn't see him take a whole lot of reps. But when he actually did play in practice, I thought he was better than what Beal did. So I think I would rather have Parks. Also, Parks is really bright. I talked to him for a while. You know, he's in like almost all AP classes. You know what the IB program is?
Not immediately, no.
International Baccalaureate. So it's basically like AP on steroids. And he had tweeted something about it. They did one of those kind of date myself here. What's it called when those guys do like the moving selfie and everybody's frozen? The mannequin challenge.
Mannequin challenge.
Yeah. 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 That thing. So he tweeted, he's like, when IB kids do the mannequin challenge. And so I asked him, we were sitting on a bench here at the Army game. I said, are you an IB? It's, I don't think I've ever encountered a prospect of that level in IB. It's really, you know, hard course to study, as well as the demands of being on a football player like that. And he said, no, but I am in almost all AP. And, you know, so I'm in classes with a lot of the IB kids and really, really bright dude. So, I think even if football doesn't work out for him, he's going to have a successful career.
Very interesting. Bud, Kurt asked us five questions.
Five.
I chose two. I'll let you let you throw them out there.
All right. Thank you, Kurt, by the way. I mean, look, man, if you can come up with five decent questions, that's awesome.
They were five questions. I tried to choose the best two, but Kurt is a Canadian listener of ours and enthusiastic and well-thought-out questions on all five.
All right, first question. With the seeming logjam at receiver, how do you see the Rudolph, Tate, Gavin, Nooney, Phillips, and Campbell, if healthy, rotation playing out? Also, is Matthews good enough as a freshman to crack your rotation? So, the second question first here, or really kind of the part B of the first question. DJ Matthews is no longer going to early enroll. He tweeted that he's going to play basketball to honor his friend who was murdered. Whether that's the entire story or whether there's a transcript issue, I don't know. That's a pretty nice thing to do to honor your friend. And I have no doubt DJ Matthews will inevitably be successful at Florida State. He's really a special slot receiver, even though he doesn't want to be called a slot receiver. That's something he really does like hates and will openly tell you that and doesn't want to be referred to. But I think he's ultimately probably more of a slot. Anyway, that's a whole lot of guys that are listed outside of Matthews. And if he's not going to early enroll, I don't know how much he's going to play as a true freshman. We'll see. Rudolph, Tate, Gavin, Nooney, Phillips, Campbell. That's six guys. And you already have, what, two redshirt junior tight ends who you got to get the ball to. And you got a whole lot of running backs. It's great to have all these weapons. I think your main guys are probably going to be Rudolph, Nooney, and Tate. I think Keith Gavin will continue to come along. Phillips' skill set is just kind of limited. I think I still believe he has really strong hands, but he's not real fast, and he doesn't stay healthy very well. Campbell, on the other hand, is sort of a freak of an athlete, never stays healthy. And at this point, you know, you got to wonder, has his development been kind of stunted? Well, I guess we'll see. He's sort of one of those guys for this year. It's like, hey, are you counting on him to do anything? At this point, no, based on past performance. Can you rule out the possibility of him doing something? Also, no. He's got freakish talent. He's 6'4 and probably the fastest guy on the team. I hope that answers the question. I do think you're going to have kind of a main three plus Gavin, which I think is pretty solid. Second question here, who are the candidates on both sides of the ball to have a Nooney-type year, a sit-and-learn year as a freshman, and explode on the scene sophomore year? So this is where I'm going to do something that Judson, our producer, gets mad at me for doing, but that is typing, probably loudly, so that I can look up the roster because I don't want to miss guys like this.
While you look up the roster, Bud, let me give you an answer on defense, and maybe you can come up with one on offense, or you can throw one on both sides. While a guy that didn't officially sit, maybe a guy that didn't have the more more playing time that we thought he would have, are necessarily the impact. If you want me to throw out a name as a guy who very much has a chance to make a splash and a big time addition, I'm going to go Josh Brown at linebacker.
Absolutely. A kid who I I just missed on as far as him making early impact. I totally thought he would. Some kids get to college and they really, really enjoy college. And it's important to remember why you're at college, especially if you have NFL goals. And I think he's going to do that. And I think he's going to have a successful career. Sometimes it just takes a year. And I think that may be what we're dealing with here, if you catch my drift. All right. Since you kind of took my answer on defense, I'm going to look to the offense here. They didn't redshirt that many guys. I think Baselli ended up getting a redshirt. Josh Ball ended up getting a redshirt. Bavion got a They did manage to redshirt almost all the freshman offensive linemen outside of Landon Dickerson. I don't think any of the skill guys redshirted. Even Neighbors played on special teams. Okay, so I'm going to say either Josh Ball or Bavion Johnson at tackle or center, I think are your prime candidates there. If we can go with somebody who didn't play very much this year, I assume Keith Gavin doesn't qualify since he did have a 66-yard kick return in the Orange Bowl, right? If I could pick him, I would.
Gavin's probably more in kind of the Josh Brown type of answer, somebody that didn't technically redshirt but certainly didn't have the impact on the field that you would have thought, and certainly is well poised to have a massive breakout. Not only did he have the return that you referenced, but Keith Gavin was targeted more seemingly in the first two quarters of that game than I remember him being the rest of the year. It was obvious that was somebody that they were going to give more of a chance to. Gavin has a massive opportunity next year. I think you properly identified that he probably will be the first player outside of the main three rotation at wide receiver. And that's not a bad answer if you want to look outside those that didn't officially redshirt.
Next question here comes from Charlie. He says, I think it's pretty clear now that the defensive improvement wasn't just a matter of weaker schedule. And then he says, damn, DeAndre sucked tonight. I believe he sent this on the night of the Orange Bowl.
He did. I just included that for a little bit of a hot take email. We need all types, and wanted to put that in there.
So, I think, Francois' shoulder may have really bothered him in the Orange Bowl. 9 of 27 is, he's not an accurate quarterback, but he's generally not that inaccurate, right? 9 of 27 is 33%.
An easy number to do math on, absolutely. Yeah.
So the first part of the question, I think I agree. The defense did legitimately improve, but I'll twist it back on him like this. And maybe you can play the part of Charlie here. What mobile quarterback did they stop? Against what team did they display any sort of competency against enough tempo spread? I mean, they literally look like chickens with their head cut off every time they face one of those offenses this year. And they are not going to face one of those probably until Louisville next year, unless Bama really starts upping tempo like crazy because they've got they're running more spread stuff now. I think they definitely improved. There's no doubt. And I think they're going to be one of the best defenses in the country next year. But we can't say that they showed improvement against one of those type offenses because they didn't play any. That's kind of the whole reason we thought they would get better in the second half of the season regardless.
Damn, DeAndre sucked tonight.
I mean, at least
the play... He did. It was rough. Certainly, there were parts of that game that were pretty cringeworthy and could certainly have you having pretty deep-seated concerns as to how much involvement he actually made throughout the course of the year.
Okay, let me ask you this. If Malik Henry's still on his roster and didn't have all those off-the-field problems, how much are we talking this offseason about a quarterback controversy after that?
It would certainly be talked about, and I would give Henry – and it's hard – honestly, I was going to throw out a percentage, but it's hard to almost throw out a percentage because you don't know Malik Henry where those two things weren't present. If you can try to remove those two things, one, him not being on the roster, and two – there are always being issues surrounding him since day he stepped on campus. If Malik Henry is just a kid that's not going to be anything other than somebody that goes to practice and tries to make the most out of the talents that he has, I would say maybe he has a 35% chance of winning the job next year, which I know fans or listeners may dismiss immediately. But if you think about that percentage and you think about that percentage versus another freshman who just started in every game that you played, I think that's fairly telling as to how open a competition that might really be.
And I'll reiterate my thing. We just don't know how much the shoulder bothered him in that game. I mean, he got popped really good. And yeah, it was his own fault, but it doesn't diminish the effect of the hit. I mean, he got crushed on that hit, and I do think it affected him some as the game wore on.
He got smashed throughout the year. Absolutely. I mean, he got hit. I think that was an issue. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what a healthy Francois looks like and how much he's made a progression, and part of that progression might be just a little bit of an ability to protect himself and not put himself in a situation to take hits like that. Bud, next question is also from a Charlie, not the same Charlie as question number 9. This Charlie writes, first, thanks for all the great work, Charlie, appreciate it. Second mailbag question, Fisher is widely credited with modernizing Florida State's football program. Since taking over, Florida State has added an IPF, improved locker rooms, offices, has provided real-time vital tracking and updates to DOAC, parentheses among others, with a new 8-year contract and a clear commitment from Florida State's administration. What's next? What does Jimbo Fisher's vision for Florida State football, in your opinion, look like over the next decade?
What he would like?
What is
it? Yeah, I guess what his vision is, what he would like it to be, right? An army of staffers? I mean, literally, like, there was that story this week that said that Alabama has a guy that breaks down first down passes, a different guy breaking down second down passes, tendencies of all the opponents, and a different guy breaking down third down. That's, like, how staffed up they are. I think Jimbo wants that. Hard to blame him. It's a tremendous, tremendous resource. Probably more luxury seating in the stadium, because that's who's going to donate most of the money to you. And you got to keep making it more attractive and compete against HGTV. Probably more recruiting staffers as well. More people breaking down recruiting film. More people to make those calls and to track where these kids are going, what they're doing on social media. More control, if that's possible. And I'll throw something else out there at you. Jimbo was like the first guy to really hardcore invest in the NASA system, right, where the GPS, where they're tracking these guys as far as they run and saying, okay, you're redlining or you're like we feel like you've exerted yourself too much in this practice, that could have a negative effect on game day, that type of thing. If it's not too much of like an intrusion in player privacy, based on that trend, would it surprise you to see him wanting these guys to wear trackable sort of biodata stuff where like Chip Kelly was doing with the Eagles, where they're tracking how much you slept, right? How much, you know, I don't know how much partying you're doing, stuff like that. I don't think they have that now. I don't think Florida State has sleep data on its players. Would they want it? Damn right. You know, do insurance companies want to put like tracking devices in your cars? Yeah. Now, that could benefit the program. I don't know how I feel about that as a player. I don't think I would want SB Nation tracking how much I sleep or don't sleep or what I do. But, man, I think that's coming, and especially because like NFL players have a hell of a lot more rights than college players. Some team's going to do this, and they're going to do it quick. And they're going to have all that information on their iPads as soon as those guys get in the next morning. You don't have to ask the guy, how much did you sleep? You'll just look at your sheet. Can you see something like that happening?
Yeah, I can see something. I mean, that's kind of where we're going. And, you know, more and more devices in our life are monitoring stuff like that in general. But, yeah, as far as the broader plan for what Fisher wants for this program, heavily resource intensive. It's not any different from a broader plan that he's wanted from day one. It's just it's the same want. It's just more modern implementations of it, which I think you did a good job of describing with what he would want. Yeah, I mean, look, Florida State today, it wasn't announced, but it wasn't announced officially, but what the American Football Coaches Association or whatever unanimously voted for the 10th position on a college staff. It'd be interesting to see once that becomes official how Fisher uses things like that. But yeah, it's a heavy resource, resource-laden staff that does not put him at a disadvantage to any program at all. If it does, then the programs would be a very small number. And I would continue to look at facility improvements in particular, and look at a desire to just improve with advanced metrics. So that would be my guess for the next 10 years. And there'll probably be, one or two things that are impossible for us to even imagine right now. It would be hard for us if we were to have gone back 5 years ago and described a 10-year plan that would have included GPS trackers and stuff like that as well. So really excited to see what the future holds. We've talked about a lot of this in past podcasts, but the contract certainly gives you stability that didn't exist otherwise, and gives you a real, very realistic possibility that if Jimbo Fisher's not here for 10, very realistic possibility that he's here for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Interesting period of time where you have a significant amount of stability, and we'll all watch and see what Fisher does with that.
Oh, can I add a couple more?
Please.
I just thought more majors to funnel kids into that they can actually pass. A football-only academic center, which we actually know that he wants.
Yeah, that's in the works, I can say. I mean, not necessarily immediately, but that's coming, and that's probably coming sooner than people realize.
And then third, do you follow StatCast in baseball?
I do not.
So I don't even know how many people know this, but in all baseball stadiums now, they have like this – I'm going to butcher exactly how to describe it, but essentially – through some combination of like GPS and lasers, which, God, is that not right up Jimbo's alley? They are able to literally track all movement on the field. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
similar, they have some stuff like this in soccer, heat maps, stuff like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So they can show exactly, like, I know this week I listened to a couple really nerdy baseball podcasts. And to be honest, I think it makes our show better because, like, I steal some of their ideas and confer them to baseball, some or to football sometimes. But this week, they actually released hang time data. So they can tell you exactly how long the ball was in the air once it struck the bat until it reached its landing point. That's really cool, man, because it used to be okay just speed and direction of the ball. So you could kind of judge like how efficient an outfielder was at getting to the ball. But now they can tell you basically exactly how long he had to get to that ball before it hit the ground. To the millisecond, and mm-hmm. it can like it'll show you this guy did like a curly cue before he ran after the ball,
right? His like track path basically. Yeah.
Can't you imagine that? Like if the technology exists for football,
I guarantee you,
Jimbo's gonna be pounding that table to get that installed not only in the stadium but on the practice field.
The steps a linebacker takes in pursuit. I mean, that would be fascinating to watch. Absolutely.
His acceleration, and that's how we can. People always say you can't measure instincts. Actually, now we can.
Mm-hmm.
If a guy is really instinctual, you know what he does? He has greater efficiency and economy of motion. Or he starts moving before anybody else does because he sees and reacts faster. That's some cool kind of like future sports tech stuff that I think is pretty neat. And that we know Fisher loves stuff like this. So I think that's kind of the thing. He's got to be looking, man. Now everybody's got the damn GPS system to track how many steps you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
How can we take that kind of thing to the next level?
What's next? Absolutely. Interesting that you mentioned that. I'll just throw this out as an Atlanta sports fan. Greg Maddux, like 20 years ago, Bud, had something that he had calculated. I'll have to go back and look the exact time, but like if the ball's in the air for more than 1.67 seconds or something like that, it should be caught. That dude was a... As somebody that got to see that guy numerous times in person, that is undoubtedly the most impressive athlete that I've ever encountered who looks the least impressive athlete physically that was as dominant as he was on the field. It was one of the better pitchers of all time, and not somebody that you would ever guess standing next to in an elevator or anything else, but a guy that was a genius, kind of a genius in geometry, and a guy that would spend his time and nerd out, and sounds like he might have been 15, 20 years ahead of his time on some of the metrics that he was going through in his head.
That's pretty cool.
That's your Atlanta Braves portion of the Nullcast.
Of course. Yes. By the way, if you are a younger listener, YouTube the Chicks Dig the Long Ball commercial that he and Glavin shot with McGuire and a girl that looks like Heather Locklear, may have been. Not a little fuzzy on this, but anyway, really good old Nike commercial back before everybody realizes how much steroids these guys were doing. Not Maddox, but the actual hitters.
No, definitely not Greg Maddox, nor Tom Glavin. But Donald asks, assuming Jimbo makes staff changes at season end, does he fill the coaching void with someone who is a better coach or a better? he drops a couple names here, but does he fill the coaching void with someone who is a better coach or a better recruiter like Tim Brewster?
My hope is that he finds somebody that if he does make these staff changes, or at least staff change singular, that he would bring in a more elite recruiter, because I do feel like Brewster carries too much of the load on this staff. Can kind of combine this with Wesley's question, number 11 above. How much does the postseason position coach firing typically hurt the current year recruiting? And also he asks, if we fire Bill Miller, the linebackers coach, which I prefer, that's Wesley prefers, I didn't say I did, will that cause anyone to flip or drop us out of the Levi Jones sweepstakes? Levi Jones, a four-star linebacker, or maybe a three-star, but kind of a three/four type kid out of Austin, Texas, who is also considering the Gators and the Aggies, and I think maybe one more school, but not as prominently as the three I mentioned. So, first answer, I think they would be better served to bring in another elite recruiter. Yes, they do recruit at an elite level, but they don't recruit right now at that sort of Bama, Ohio State level, right? You want to be there if you can, and I think you can come close at Florida State, closer than you are right now. I think there's more – I'll say this. I think there's more room to improve the recruiting ability of the staff than there is to improve the coaching ability of the staff. People are probably not going to agree with that. But, man, talent wins. Everybody wants to talk about how a two-star caught the winning touchdown against Alabama. That's true. Guess what? A five-star mm-hmm. threw it to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, one of the better quarterbacks of recent memory, and a five-star from the time he was a sophomore in high school threw it to him.
So. And I'll credit that two-star kid. Did you see his post-game interview?
I did not, no.
Well, they're always kind of having to worry about covering Deion Kane and Mike Williams and Jordan Leggett and Tay Scott and then also Deshaun and Wayne Gallman. I seem to always kind of be on a safety or a linebacker, which is great because I run good routes. I was like, that is a kid that knows his role. Look at that. That is like – it's so true. You know, if you're a defense – he's the fifth or sixth most dangerous option on that team, which kind of speaks to the depth of weapons they have. But he's always in kind of the Renfro kid for Clemson. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, talent wins. You got to have talent. Again, the national title this year went to a team that had signed more 4 and 5 stars than 2 and 3 stars in the previous four classes. That's a streak that's dating back now, I think, 15 years. So pretty good evidence there that is an important part of college football, the players that actually play the game. If you fired Bill Miller, would it cause anyone to flip or drop like Levi Jones? Look, I know Levi Jones likes Bill Miller. I don't think he's the only guy on the staff that he likes. The bigger concern I think I would have is, A, the proximity of Texas A&M, which could be a factor. We'll see. But also, if Randy Shannon, now he is the defensive coordinator of the Gators, they actually promoted him, which, by the way, a stat here, Florida State, Jimbo Fisher averages 38 points against Randy Shannon defenses over 5 career games. That is a very nice stat. which we made a meme of and put on Time Hawk Nation. Sorry for rambling here. And the first question is just quite honestly a little too generic. It was, you know, how much does a postseason coach firing typically hurt the current year recruiting? It just so much depends on what coach and when and why. I don't think we can really put a blanket statement on that.
It's certainly dependent upon where you are in the recruiting cycle. It's also dependent upon what positions you have kids that are, you know, more or less firmly committed to you, and how firmly they are. So it's hard. I agree. It's hard to rubber stamp that and give a consistent answer. That is that's very much situationally dependent.
Absolutely. All right. You want to do one more, and then we can probably wrap this, and we can go back to the second half of these questions later this week or early next week.
I think that's a good idea. A lot of these aren't time sensitive. This is somewhat time sensitive as it's recruiting related, but it is asked to us by a longtime listener and somebody that we love hearing feedback from. Matthew Leach, one editor of MLB.com and a listener of the Nolcast. Matthew asks, is there a backup plan at quarterback if Blackman goes to West Virginia? If so, would it be another high school kid, JUCO, transfer, anything, or will they just transfer their focus to 2018?
That's a great question. Man, I have not thought about it because everybody I talk to just thinks Blackman is going to be solid. So that's probably the most important aspect of this answer. He's visiting this weekend at Florida State, so that's also good to know.
That's good to know. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of questions that I ended up sorting through, and then, Bud, I'll let you run with it, just about the quarterback class in general, and if Florida State somehow kind of shorted themselves with the pairing of Blackman and the Bailey Hawkman kid. I'll just give you my personal opinion, and then, Bud, you can resume with your answer and throw yours in if you're wanting. One, Florida State kind of needed to sign two kids, and it's really hard to sign two, like, truly, truly elite kids to convince them to come in the same year. Blackman, I think you have a great pairing here of a kid with a really high upside that's raw in Blackman. And Bailey Hawkman, honestly, probably a better prospect than most people give him credit for, and a kid who has had impressive tape throughout high school. But I would very much encourage people to go look at his senior year highlights, even. Has all the arm in the world. Coach's son and is going to be a really tough competitor from the time he gets on campus. So I realize there's not a kid that when you pull up his profile on 247, Rivals, whatever, that's going to have five stars and be ranked, you know, second or third in the country. But I do think you're getting two pretty solid prospects, assuming that you actually have Blackman go through and sign his LOI and go to Tallahassee.
Okay. I think there's a couple key things to consider here. Number one, if they didn't take a second quarterback in the class and they would only have three on the roster, which I don't think they want to do, even though they do like the walk-on they have. The name escapes me, but I know they've said good things about him before.
Aquinas kid?
Yeah.
Yeah. Name escapes me as well, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't think that there's a JUCO out there that you could go take right now, and JUCOs, for the most part, want to come in with a decent shot at a starting job, which, realistically, they don't have if Francois is there. Nobody you can get out of JUCO can you honestly say, yeah, you have a real good shot at starting or a legitimate shot at starting. Nobody at this point in the cycle. Now, if you had gotten Jarrett Stidham, I think he could maybe come in and start right away. But that's a transfer kid that went to Auburn, and I don't think he really had a shot on, nor I don't think he ever really expressed interest in. So a transfer, that could be an attractive option, actually. If they wanted to bring in a one-year transfer type who was transferring maybe because he legitimately likes a major offer at Florida State, or maybe he wasn't going to start at his other school, probably wouldn't start at FSU, maybe has some kind of experience or something. Again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that they would maybe look at a second 2018 kid, or excuse me, a second 2017 high schooler, or maybe they would just pocket the scholarship. I will say that if you're going to miss on a truly elite prospect, and this year they have, and for 2018, I don't know that there's anybody that they've been able to get in on who is truly elite. If you're going to miss on it, and you're going to try and solve that by taking two, I think the two you're taking is a really nice combination of risk-reward, okay? You're balancing risk by taking Hockman. Coach's son, a lot of high school experience, knows football well. I think he has a very high floor. I don't think that Hockman is going to come in and be terrible, right? And I think he could potentially, if you had to put him in a game in 2018, I think he could. You could put him in a game, wouldn't lose you a game. I do think his ceiling is limited. The arm's not huge. He's only like 6'2". You know, he's not a big kid. On the other hand, James Blackman, the floor is lower than what Hockman's is. There's a lot more risk built into his projection. However, taller kid, longer, much bigger arm, more athletic. The ceiling is a lot higher. So you're balancing risk-reward with these two, I think, in a good way. Would it be better just to have one kid who is a truly elite prospect? Yeah. But that's not going to happen every year. And I think they've done a good job of getting to their secondary targets in this class with how that all went down.
Good deal, bud. I think that's a good answer and similar to my thoughts and what I expressed as well. I also think it's a good idea, being that we've been going on for a longer period of time than we'd probably like to put into one podcast, that we go ahead and stop this here. We have a decent amount of questions that we can always come back to and draw upon. We'll have another mailbag hopefully in the next 10 days. Want to appreciate the feedback that we got from this. Like I said, always love the social interactions that we have. I told Bud and our producer Judson this earlier tonight. I logged into the Nolcast Gmail account, the account that Bud and I share, and honestly thought that somehow somebody had gotten our email in spam or something like that. I had a number of unread emails that I couldn't fathom was actually legitimate, and it was. So the feedback that we've gotten has been incredible. We will have a second part of this to try to get to everybody's question. Bud, this is only the final question I want to throw to you because it is dated, and it's only going to be it's only going to grow more extinct over time. But I did find this in the way back question as I was going through all these, and that is, this is from Sam, direct to you, not me. So I'll let you field it. Bud, do you think Ole Miss can use Leonard Fournette's decision to skip his bowl game to lure Cam Akers to Ole Miss? If you're not eligible to play in a bowl game, you'll never feel pressure to risk your career. So, I thought that was really, really funny.
Well done, Sam.
I appreciate it, and I wanted to include it in the podcast, even if it was no longer timely accurate, but it was very well put together.
All right. I want to share a little anecdote here about Cam Akers. Everybody seemed to like my last one. Because NBC is a strategic partner / investor in SB Nation or in Vox Media, which owns SB Nation, I'm there literally on the field at the Army game, you know, in the huddle, all that stuff. So I'm shooting film like literally right next to these guys and chatting them up. And in order to shoot film better, I would actually ask them, like after the play was signaling from the sideline, what play is this? And they would tell me like run or pass. That way I could, you know, figure out what depth to put my camera. Well, when you're that close, you hear what all these guys are saying. And literally, I was cracking up so hard with all these Ole Miss people saying Cam Akers is still considering Ole Miss and this isn't done and that's not done and blah, blah, blah. And you kind of want to just let those people give themselves enough rope to see where they take it. There were literally prospects mocking how much Cam Akers was recruiting for FSU, right? Like Cam Akers would not shut up about coming to FSU. So when I saw that, I kind of chuckled myself. Yeah, I think they're off pace a little bit here. I don't think he's, you know, they're like, oh, he's not on campus yet. It's a 7-hour drive. Maybe he's a 18-year-old high school kid who doesn't pack worth the damn and has to pack. Maybe he wants to say goodbye to his, you know, his mom. That kid was all FSU once he committed. I do think he was really seriously torn up until about 48 hours before he committed. There were all kinds of crazy rumors, you know, about where he was going. Hell, I had a guy who covers LSU tell me that at one point Akers was trying to recruit Tua Tagovailoa, Bama's quarterback. And this was, I think, like 6 weeks ago, the LSU guy was trying to tell me. I don't know if this is true or not because I can't verify it. He was trying to tell me that Akers, once he was convinced that Lane Kiffin was coming to LSU with Orgeron, was trying to get Tua to go with him to LSU. If that's true, that's evidence of a kid who really didn't make up his mind until pretty late in this process. Also, remember Antonio Carter, the kid that decommitted from Georgia when Georgia ran out of spots because Nick Chubb and Sony Michel came back?
Right.
How about this? There was word from Texas high school coaches that FSU came in there and offered him as soon as he decommitted, which was like, what, a week before Akers committed? So that could indicate that FSU at that point didn't know where the hell this kid was going. And that it really, when he says, I made up my mind 2 days before, you know, maybe he had a good idea where he's going about 5 days before, but really kind of made the final call 2 days before. I tend to believe him if either one of those things I was told are true.
It's a fair point, and certainly excited and eager to draw upon any observations that you're able to share with us with your time out in Orlando with the Under Armour or the Army All-American game. San Antonio? Is that where that is? Okay. So, anyways, I know you've been traveling about, and we were going to do this yesterday, and you had just gotten back. Better to postpone and put another day between recording podcast to give you a little more time to adjust and let you address some of the things at hand, but really appreciate you being able to share what you can from your time out there. And both of those Akers anecdotes are pretty interesting, and I would say the circumstantial evidence, particularly surrounding what you said in the second one, is there. And look, Florida State, I'll pat ourselves on the back here. I think we did as good of a job as covering this recruitment as anybody from the middle point of summer. Florida State positioned themselves as well as possible and put themselves in a place to take advantage of some of the mistakes Ole Miss made. And if it wasn't a decision that was made, you know, up until 72 hours of him making it official, really doesn't matter. What matters is that he made it, ended up signing an LOI, coming on campus, and you have you have one of the more talented high school running backs over the past couple of years enrolled and on campus and a Seminole. But really interesting to get a little bit of a behind the scenes look there and some of the things that you shared with us from your experiences traveling around.
Oh, one final one. If I think people who listen this far have deserved it. I'm not sure. I'm not going to say the name or coach it was yet because I'm still kind of debating as to whether this should actually go in a video or not. So we shoot these little profiles of these kids, and you know sometimes I'll ask them some stuff. You know, hey, what's the meal you're going to miss the most that your mom makes? They all love to open up and talk about mama. And sometimes I'll ask them, like, what's the funniest story you have about a coach, right? And so this player, who FSU fans certainly know, said that he was talking to the coach on the phone, and he said, all right, coach, I'm going to go see my girlfriend now. And the coach told him, according to the player, all right, don't go pull no hammies now with that girlfriend. On camera, like, totally intends that to be the story he wants to share for his five-minute profile.
I appreciate that. That's some real honesty. There was a safety on Florida State's team a couple years ago who the coaches would tease him that he was not able to make a full recovery from a groin injury that he had because of his girlfriend.
That was a legit concern, though.
That was a very legitimate concern.
True.
You're damn right. You damn right. And that's the dangers of a groin injury in particular, because there's many things that people will give up in the effort of rehabilitation, but sometimes that is not one of them. And it's pretty tough to come back to some injuries when you can't necessarily shelve desires for a couple weeks.
All right.
So not necessarily the place I thought we'd take the podcast in the final couple minutes, but both of those are true.
Yeah. All right. Until next time.
Yeah, until next time. Folks, if you're still listening at this point, very much appreciate it. Tried our best to answer questions. We will have a part two, undoubtedly, and group as many of these together and put that together. But always appreciate a listen. Always appreciate the interaction that we have on social media, the support that you guys have shown, Madison Social and Louisiana Hot Sauce, and for Bud and I both. Thank you very much. We will continue to do these. We're not just providing lip service about the basketball team. Honestly, we were going to touch on that for a decent amount of time tonight, but wanted to do this mailbag. More than aware of the victories over UVA and what transpired last night with Duke. But I know we're going to try to bring on a guest or two guests in particular to provide good insight there. Yeah, we're going to cover recruiting as well as anybody can, and we are not unaware as to what's going on in the basketball court, and that will be something that we bring to you soon as well. But always appreciate the listen to the podcast. Always appreciate the support that the Knollcast receives. And until next time, thank you very much for listening to us tonight. Till I became a third party, where there ain't no party line. You hear me talking, gonna hang this phone up now and dial again. Oh, and there better be a soprano on the other end, 'cause if the voice is baritone when you told me you'd be home alone, well then I'm wasting my time, and not to mention my dime. So if a man answers your phone, honey, I'm gone.